This program is sponsored in part by the American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatments, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. Epilepsy Foundation Florida leads the fight to overcome the challenges of living with epilepsy and to accelerate therapies to stop seizures, find cures, and save lives. Visit epilepsy.com/Florida to find out how to get involved today. Neurelis, a leading neuroscience company focused on the development and commercialization of therapeutics for the treatment of epilepsy and other neurologic disorders. The company's unique drug portfolios strive to address unmet needs in patient care. Learn more at Neurelis.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joe Servin, a neurologist that practices at the Mayo Clinic here in Jacksonville. This is What's Health Got to Do With It, which looks at where and how healthcare intersects with your life, helping you get the medical answers you want. Coming up, we take questions from our weekly mailbag for our experts on pancreatic cancer. Then, Raymond Penn joins us to talk about his mission to find a cure for pancreatic cancer after his wife succumbed to the disease. Later, we talk to Star Wars and A Star Is Born actor Greg Grunberg about his important role as the father of a son with epilepsy and his efforts to raise awareness about the disease during National Epilepsy Awareness Month. But first this hour, November is Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month. Why me? That was the question that consumed me on that flight from New York. It was so sudden. Joe, Cheryl, come over here, was the greeting from a friendly acquaintance, a giant in the field at a New York TV studio right before we were to go live with a panel discussion about the latest treatment for another condition. He put his arms around each of us, creating a circle, and then looked at each of us directly, creating an immediate connection. "I have terminal pancreatic cancer," he said gently, gulping on his words. No other words were uttered, just a rush of shock and emotion in this remarkable group embrace. Cheryl then spontaneously said a prayer in Hebrew that even though I didn't know what the words meant, I completely understood. And just like that, he let go, and we were forever bound in his secret. I only saw him once more before he died. Until now, I've never brought up this moment. To this day, I still wonder why tell me, a friendly connection, but not a best friend. Well, I guess the answer is to be here sharing this story on this show with you during National Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month so that we can help others in his memory and you can join the extended group hug spanning time and place to the present day. In a feature story on the topic of pancreatic cancer, Scientific American wrote, quote, "We can all be grateful that pancreatic cancer is pretty rare, accounting for about 3% of all cancers. Its toll tells another story," close quote. Consider the giants in our society that we have lost to the disease. Alex Trebek, Aretha Franklin, Steve Jobs, Luciano Pavarotti, to name a few. 5 years ago, it was the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S., today, it's number 3 and expected to overtake colon cancer for the number 2 spot, right behind lung cancer. Even more upsetting, this lethal condition is becoming more common. In the U.S., its incidence has crept up by about 0.5% annually for more than a decade. Here in Florida, the American Cancer Society estimates that in 2021, 4,700 Floridians will be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, a challenging disease to treat because it spreads rapidly and is often found close to other organs. However, there is hope in this information. Up to 30% of pancreatic cancers are preventable by changes in lifestyle. So if you know someone with this cancer or are interested in learning the latest treatments, tests, and preventative strategies, stick with us. We have a lot to offer you for Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month. Joining us now is Dr. Diane Simeone, a professor of surgery and pathology and the director of the Pancreatic Cancer Center at the Laura and Isaac Perlmutter Cancer Center at New York University Langone, and Dr. Niraj Ghusani. He's chief of the section of surgical oncology at the Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center. So Dr. Simeone and Dr. Gusani, welcome to our program.
Pleasure to be here.
Dr. Simeone, let me start off with a question just so that people understand, given that I think that we need to let people know, what's the pancreas? What's its role in our body to start off with?
So the pancreas is an organ that not that many people know where it is. It's in the back of the upper abdomen, most of it behind the stomach, and it really serves two major functions. First, it makes insulin, so it helps control our blood sugar, and it also makes digestive enzymes that helps us digest food. It is an organ that doesn't regenerate, so when we think about treating it surgically, we have to be thoughtful in what parts we remove and what parts we leave in place.
That's at least a helpful starting point for us. Dr. Gusani, can you tell us, what is pancreatic cancer?
Yeah, thank you, Joe. The pancreas, as Dr. Simeone mentioned, has two types of cells. The cells that produce the insulin, which could go bad and create a type of cancer called a neuroendocrine tumor. In fact, there are other hormones that are produced by the pancreas, and so these tumors can overproduce some of these hormones. But many of these tumors are actually non-functional. This type, however, is actually quite rare. A famous example is Steve Jobs. But in general, when we think of pancreatic cancer, we think of gland or duct cancers of the pancreas, which arise from the cells that make the digestive enzymes. These go bad, essentially, much more commonly, creating pancreatic adenocarcinoma, or a gland cancer of the pancreas, which is what we think of when we think of pancreatic cancer more commonly. And this is, as you mentioned, a cancer with rising incidence and is generally thought to have poor prognosis and only slowly getting better over time.
Dr. Simeone, kind of taking on that theme, why are we seeing an increase in the death rate and number of cases with this cancer compared to other cancers like prostate or breast cancer?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And certainly I think we all feel that we're seeing more and more people that we all know in our community that have pancreatic cancer. The incidence has slowly been increasing over time. It's probably due to several factors. There is a link between pancreatic cancer and obesity and diabetes, so that may be part of it. It is also linked to smoking. And there is a heritable component where at least 15% of patients with pancreatic cancer, it's due to a risk that's familial in nature. But I would say still about half of the patients I see in the clinic with pancreatic cancer, I can't put my finger on what their risk factor is. So we still have a lot that we don't know about pancreatic cancer. From a mortality perspective, the thing that sticks out about pancreatic cancer is we haven't developed as effective therapies as we would like. And part of the problem is we're already behind the eight ball when pancreatic cancer is diagnosed. And at least half of patients at the time of first diagnosis, the tumor is already spread away from the pancreas, what we call metastatic disease. And when pancreatic cancer has metastasized, it's much more difficult to treat. Obviously, a big push in the advance in breast and colon cancer has been early detection. And right now, we don't have those tools in hand for early detection of pancreas cancer. That's clearly an important area of ongoing work.
I appreciate that. Dr. Gusani, one of the questions that I know if our listener will be listening out there to the show, and they will wonder, what are the symptoms? What are those things? In breast cancer, we know that there's a lump. In prostate cancer, people may find that they go to the bathroom more. What are those symptoms that you'd expect with this cancer?
Yes, as we talked about, the pancreas sits in the back of the abdomen. And as such, It's not in a place where it's easily accessible or the symptoms are readily going to cause problems. So the symptoms of pancreatic cancer are very mundane. People may get some malaise, some difficulties eating or feeling full. They may start to have some subtle weight loss. They may have changes to their digestion such that they get diarrhea or greasy stools. An increasingly noted risk factor or sign of pancreatic cancer is worsening diabetes. So if your diabetes is becoming harder to control or you develop new onset diabetes later in life, this could be a sign of pancreatic cancer. We sometimes worry about pain that goes to the back. And then at the later stages, patients can develop jaundice or yellowing of the eyes and skin. And that can be accompanied by dark urine, light colored stools, and a progressive syndrome of feeling tired, fatigued, weight loss, et cetera, as we talked about.
So a whole collection of things, but they sound very nonspecific in some direction or another. You're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and today we're discussing pancreatic cancer and epilepsy awareness. And we want to hear from you. If you have a question about this topic or our next week's topic, does my doctor need to look like me, tweet me at Jay Servin or send an email to health@wjct.org. Dr. Gusani, how do we diagnose this?
So pancreatic cancer, as we said, often does not cause a lot of symptoms very early. So it's important to kind of know your body, and if something isn't feeling right, or especially if symptoms are persistent, the symptoms we talked about malaise or pain, or certainly if you develop jaundice, you need to go to your doctor. From there, you'll usually get blood tests, and an elevated bilirubin, which is a sign of jaundice, can be one of the first signs of pancreatic cancer. We don't have a great set of blood tests to detect pancreatic cancer. We do have some tumor markers, but these aren't perfectly specific. Usually, we find pancreatic cancer on imaging. So you get a CT scan or an MRI, which shows us the area of the back of the abdomen and can often show, if not the cancer itself, then secondary signs of the cancer, such as blockage of the bile duct or the pancreatic duct, or blockage of the blood vessels.
Okay, Dr. Simeone, then if they find this on one of these scans, what treatments are going to be presented to a patient that has this?
So it's important when a patient develops symptoms and a scan is done that picks up a pancreatic mass, we usually want to make sure we have high-quality imaging of the pancreas and also of the chest so we can properly stage a patient. In general, there are a couple different categories of staging that we pay attention to. One is whether the patient has a tumor that can be removed with surgery without involvement of major blood vessels. That's what's called a resectable pancreatic cancer. Then we have a second category that's a little bit more involved, where the tumor is still confined to the pancreas, but it's starting to wrap around some of the key blood vessels that supply blood to the liver and the intestines. And that's what we call a borderline or locally advanced pancreatic cancer. And then we have a category of patients that they have evidence of spread of the cancer away from the pancreas. So depending on which category a patient might be in, and this is often determined in the context of review by a multidisciplinary team of not only surgeons, but medical oncologists, radiologists, et cetera, we try to do two things for every patient. Not only the imaging to stage the tumor, but also, and this is standard of care for all patients with pancreatic cancer, do what we call germline testing, where we see if they might carry any gene that put them at risk for pancreatic cancer. And then two, obtain a biopsy and sequence the tumor to see if they have any particular vulnerabilities in their tumor for treatment. So for patients who have a clearly upfront resectable pancreatic cancer, clearly surgery is something that can be considered. But for the other two categories of either metastatic or borderline locally advanced pancreatic cancer, those are usually treated with either combination chemotherapy upfront or consideration of a clinical trial.
So, Dr. Ghusani, when you hear these options or when you're seeing a patient in the office, what's the prognosis here? Or is it going to depend on what shows up when you get the scans and all those type of testing completed?
It, of course, depends on the details of the testing. And as we've mentioned, most pancreatic cancers are often found quite late and unfortunately have spread outside the pancreas and are not something that can be treated surgically. If a patient has a localized tumor, then a combination of chemotherapy, surgery, sometimes radiation as well, can offer a potentially curative option, and we do see long-term survivors from pancreatic cancer. But unfortunately, this is rare, and as we try to get early detection strategies in place, we hope to find more of these. For patients with more advanced cancers, chemotherapy is an option, and it's meant to prolong life. And we're having more and more treatment options available to us in terms of newer drugs and combinations and so on. But overall, we generally cannot cure the disease when it's spread outside the pancreas.
Dr. Simeone, before you have to go, I want to leave our listeners with a sense of a hope. Where do you see treatments going in terms of the future? And do you see some hopeful signs with regards to the work in that area?
Yeah, so I want to draw the listeners' attention to two large efforts that are important for everybody interested in pancreatic cancer around the country to know about. One is a new clinical trial platform called Precision Promise. And this is really a large-scale effort to bring more effective therapies to patients with pancreatic cancer, initially with a focus on patients with metastatic pancreatic cancer, but we'll be branching out to locally advanced pancreatic cancer. That's a clinical trial platform I helped develop with a sizable group of people through the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. So you can go to the PanCAN website and look up Precision Promise. There are now 20 centers around the country participating, and soon another 10 to join. So this is and that's done in partnership with the FDA and a large consortium of drug companies to provide new, better therapies for pancreatic cancer. The second important platform is something called the PRECEDE study. This now involves 39 centers around the country. And this is for anybody out there that has a family history of pancreas cancer. So there's a website, precedestudy.org. Important for people to know, if you have pancreas cancer, you should get genetic testing to see if you carry a gene that puts put you at risk for pancreatic cancer. If you carry such a gene, and an example would be a BRCA mutation, then you may be eligible specific therapies to treat your cancer. And it helps identify if people in your family are also at risk for pancreatic cancer. There's even now new guidelines that if anybody has a single first degree family member with pancreas cancer, and by that I mean a sibling or a parent, that person should get tested to see if they carry a gene that put them at risk for pancreatic cancer. So what we appreciate, and Niraj and I are talking about it, is we already kind of have our one hand tied behind our back because pancreatic cancer gets picked up so late. But I think if we really push picking it up early, then we can shift survival. In fact, there's data that if pancreatic cancers are picked up when they're 1 centimeter or smaller, the long-term survival rate can be at least 75%. So this is a really important message to everybody out there to just make sure if you have somebody in your family that has pancreatic cancer to seek information from an expert. And again, if you go to the PRECEDE website, I know Niraj's site at MD Anderson in Florida, I'm sure is involved with that. But any center that has pancreatic cancer expertise, this is the kind of cancer you want to be seen by people who know what they're doing and because of the complexity of the cancer. And I just want to pass that information on.
That is incredibly helpful. And I just want to say thank you so much for all your insights and wisdoms. I know you're a very busy person. Thank you so much for joining the program today.
It's My pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking to Dr. Simeone, a professor of surgery and pathology, the director of the Pancreatic Cancer Center at the Laura and Isaac Perlmutter Cancer Center at New York University Langone. Our associate producer, Catherine Hobbs, collects your questions from email, phone calls, and social media. Catherine, what questions and comments do you have for Dr. Ghusani this week?
Well, we got lots of good questions this week. One comes from Jessica. She emailed us and said that she takes birth control, and she wants to know if that can impact her pancreas because of the hormones.
Dr. Ghusani, that's always a big question since this is one of the big organs with hormones. I'm sure people are wondering if I'm an insulin, if I'm on a sex hormone like estrogen. What role do they play with this?
Yeah, that's a really important question, and it's important to be aware of the hormonal environment in the body. The pancreas does indeed produce hormones. These are usually digestive hormones such as insulin, glucagon, and others. The pancreas is not thought to be affected by estrogen and other sex-type hormones. And so there are no studies that say that taking birth control pills, hormone replacement, or other such things would increase the risk of pancreatic cancer. There are some familial syndromes, such as the BRCA mutation, which is BRCA mutation, which predisposes to both breast and pancreatic cancer. And so there's a little bit of a relationship there. And in fact, maybe some differing treatments for patients with BRCA mutation pancreatic cancer versus those with a regular kind of run-of-the-mill pancreatic cancer. But those on hormones don't need to stop just because of the risk of pancreatic cancer. There's no known association.
Thanks. Catherine, what else do we have?
Jill from Atlanta wrote to us saying that she is inundated with information about foods that predispose you to risk of cancer or can help build resilience. And she wants to know if there's any link between drinking wine specifically or any other food and drink and pancreatic cancer.
So, Dr. Ghusani, what is that connection between nutrition, food, alcohol, and pancreatic cancer?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar link, right? We want
right.
to eat healthier and eat the right foods. The known risk factors for pancreatic cancer include cigarette smoking and obesity. But in and of itself, there's not any obvious association between different food intake, types of foods or liquid intake and pancreatic cancer. Now, alcohol in general, there are some studies that show that increased alcohol intake can increase the overall risk of all types of cancers, but not necessarily specifically pancreatic cancer. There's some other effects of alcohol in terms of inflammation and so on. And so red wine might be good for your heart in certain quantities and so on. For pancreatic cancer, it's a little more unclear. So I can't give you a diet that does prevent or does cause pancreatic cancer. In general, we all need to kind of eat right, and a healthy, low-fat, high-protein diet is probably going to keep us in good health in terms of all aspects of our life and our health.
So like in everything else, moderation is key.
Exactly.
We've been talking to Dr. Niraj Ghusani. He is chief of the Section of Surgical Oncology at the Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center, and we've been talking about pancreatic cancer. Dr. Ghusani, thank you so much for all of your help today in answering our questions today.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure to be on and to help raise awareness in our community about pancreatic cancer.
And up next, pancreatic cancer awareness is personal for our next guest. And later, we talk about epilepsy, as November is also Epilepsy Awareness Month with Star Wars and A Star Is Born actor Greg Grunberg. We'll be right back.
The pancreas can taste sugars through taste receptor cells that let it sense the presence of sugar. It can taste artificial sweeteners too. However, unlike the taste buds on our tongue, it doesn't relay these sensations back to the brain. Instead, this sensory information helps the pancreas balance out the hormones and maintain healthy glucose levels in the body.
Welcome back. This is What's Health Got to Do with It. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, a Mayo Clinic, Florida neurologist. Thanks for listening. Pancreatic cancer isn't just a disease that someone else gets. For our next guest, it's personal. Raymond Penn is a Florida native who lost his wife of 44 years to pancreatic cancer in 2018. He's made it his mission to raise awareness and find a cure for the disease. He volunteers for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, a national organization whose mission is to improve the lives of everyone impacted by pancreatic cancer by advancing research, building community, sharing knowledge, and advocating for patients. He joins us now to share his story. Raymond, welcome to our show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. Let me first start off by saying my condolences for the loss of your wife. And I know you're here to talk about that. And maybe I'd like to start off with, can you tell us about your story, your journey, if you will, with pancreatic cancer?
Sure. Like many people, pancreatic cancer was not something that we were very familiar with. I can go back and I like to start my story out by telling people how me and my wife came together and how we met each other. We met each other when we were 13 years old in Detroit.
And wow.
She became my girl next door. She moved next door to me, and we became high school sweethearts, and we walked to school together and everything. And we wound up even having our first baby when we were both 16 and 17 years old. But we were very much in love with each other and was dedicated to make our situation work. And once I joined the military, I joined the Navy, and she followed me all over the U.S. As I did my military tour. And we had two more kids, who, as a matter of fact, all three of my kids are in the military right now. Kind of followed in my footsteps.
Wow.
We were together, married for 36 years before she passed away. And that's what I said, we were friends for 44. But the interesting part about our relationship or our whole situation with cancer is that Laura liked to sew and embroider and was friendly with everyone. So in our neighborhood, in our community, we were participating in all the walks for cancer, the breast cancer walk, the lung cancer, heart disease, everything. So we were participating in all of these walks.
Sure.
She would make vows and things for people and help do fundraising for the different groups. And it was, as a matter of fact, it was at a breast cancer walk when we were getting ready to do the walk. And I looked in Laura's eyes, and her eyes were yellow. And I was like, Laura, your eyes are yellow. So it was a Saturday. So we said, okay, first thing Monday, we're going to the doctor. So we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, we got to get her checked. We think it might be many things. We hate to jump, but let's have everything checked out. And that's when they did the exam on her and said, yes, unfortunately, you have pancreatic cancer. Which immediately we start doing research, because like I said, this was new to us. We knew about all the other cancers because we were participating in fundraisers and helping awareness for them, but pancreatic wasn't one that was on our radar at that time. But it quickly did, as we found out about pancreatic cancer and how the survival rate was. Like, it was unbelievable compared to all the other cancers. And we decided that we were going to come after this. We were going to jump into this and do as much as we can to make sure that Laura was going to be a survivor. And then the same process of making people aware of this disease as many people as we possibly could. So that's when I found out about the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And they were doing Purple Strides. They were doing fundraising walks and passing out free information. They gave us free pamphlets. They gave us Patient Central, was giving us information on all the clinical trials and all the doctors and everything in our neighborhood, in our community that can help us out. So we were like, wow, this sounds like a very good organization. Let's help pass the word. You know, so for 3 years, you know, as Laura was going through this, going through her chemo and going through her radiation, you know, to try to beat this, because, like I said, the survival rate was crazy. When somebody tell you that only 5% of the people with pancreatic cancer live past 5 years,
yeah,
95% are gone within 5 years, you're kind of shocked.
Yeah, you know, so I can imagine.
We've got to do something about this. Now, the numbers have gone up since she passed in 2018. The number has gone up to 10% now. And I like to think that we had a little bit to do with it, because we definitely were out there. For 3 years, we were participating, putting the word out to as many people as we can. I'm the, for Jacksonville, I'm the outreach chair for the Pancreatic Cancer Network, the Jacksonville affiliate. So, and what I do is I'll go when companies have their health fairs, or even job fairs, I'll go in and I'll talk to them about pancreatic cancer. And a lot of people not aware of pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. They've heard of famous people. And I think it's got a little more notoriety because it has been a few more famous people, like Aretha Franklin.
Right. Steve Jobs.
Alex.
Trebek, yeah.
You know, so it's getting it's picking up a lot of steam. But we're still not where we should be. It's pretty obvious that in some of my talking points, I speak on that the more research and the more money that's been put into cancer, it seems like those are the cancers that are have more survivability, because there's the funding is there, the research is there, and because pancreatic cancer doesn't get that much notoriety, a lot of, I would think, researchers go into the big cancer because that's where all the money's at.
Absolutely. Mr. Penn, Raymond, tell us about, like, you know, what kind of treatments did your wife had to do during those 3 years?
Well, when we first found out, the reason that she turned yellow is because her, and if I say this wrong, the doctor can tell me, is her bile duct was blocked. The duodenum was blocked, so she had to go in and have surgery to get that unblocked first, because the cancer was blocking that up. So she had to do that, and then it came down to finding what. There was a lot of treatments out there for cancer at that time. There's mixtures, F5, I think it was called FU5.
Mm-hmm. Right, a lot of different chemos and things of that sort.
Yes. So she was doing a regimen of chemo, and she was doing in between, she was also doing radiation treatment at UF cancer treatment.
Understood.
To try to also shrink the cancer.
Raymond, you know, in our last moment or so, if our listener is sitting out there and maybe they're in that shock and surprise if they've gotten a diagnosis like this. Where can they learn more about your organization? Where can they reach out?
If you can go to pancan.org. They have a patient central. Right there, patient central, they give you all the information. It's amazing, the information that they give you. They'll mail you out a pamphlet for free. They'll give you all the information on, like, know your tumor, biomarker research, the different clinical trials. With Laura, there was maybe a couple of hundred clinical trials that she could have been able to participate in based on where she was. But I would say the first start would be to go into connect with pancreaticcancer.org, pancan.org, Patient Central, and they will start setting you up with all the information you need locally, and if you want to, you know, go further away from home, they will set you up with that too.
Raymond, I just want to, just say thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Just hearing about how high school, you know, from age 13 and all those years of marriage, I know that is not easy, but you are truly helping a lot of people out there by sharing your story. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing it with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I love telling my story to anyone that'll listen. So everyone that knows me, they know about Laura.
Well, we remember her now, and we want to thank you again. We've been talking to Mr. Raymond Penn. He is a Pancreatic Cancer Action Network volunteer, and he was sharing his story with us with his beloved wife, Laura, and their story on battling with pancreatic cancer. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Greg Grunberg, and you are listening to my buddy's podcast. This is the best interview show you could be listening to, but I have a question. What's health got to do with it?
Welcome back. Move over, Kevin Bacon. You know that parlor game, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, where everyone in Hollywood can be connected to each other by the actor? Well, our next guest can arguably replace Mr. Bacon. Greg Grunberg has appeared in an incredible number of hit TV shows and movies, like the recent Star Wars trilogy, A Star is Born, Heroes, Alias, Star Trek, Lost. The list goes on and on. However, today he's here to talk about his most important role, that of dad, specifically a parent who's had to help manage and deal with a child who had a chronic condition, epilepsy. Now, epilepsy is a neurological condition characterized by unprovoked seizures, that's like a sudden electrical storm, and it affects one of every 26 individuals in the United States, or 3.4 million people. 224,000 of them live here in Florida alone. November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month, and he joins us now to tell us about this. Greg, it is a pleasure to have you on What's Health Got to Do with It?
Thank you. I am so happy to be here. In full transparency, I've known you for a long time. You do so much for the epilepsy community, and we have worked together tirelessly, you know, over the years. So this was just, an inevitability and a pleasure. So thanks for having me on, especially during Epilepsy Awareness Month, which is, you know, so important and near and dear to my heart.
Well, I know myself and our team here and our listeners just love to hear your voice here in Jacksonville and nationally as well. Greg, for those who don't know, can you share with us your journey with your son Jake and his epilepsy? Can you kind of go over the story
Sure.
of that whole scenario?
Yeah, I mean, so my wife and I, we had absolutely no idea what epilepsy was. We knew what it was, but we had no experience. No one in our family had ever had a seizure. We were typical in as far as our knowledge of, maybe in elementary school, I saw somebody fall and, you know, convulse and have a big, back then we used to call them, the grand mal seizures. But that was it. And then, our first child, Jake, was born. And when he, right before he reached 7, and his 7-year checkup, when we were driving in the car, he would look out the window. And if you look at somebody's eyes, when they're looking out the window of a car or a train or a bus or whatever, they're catching things, right? So their eyes, their pupils are darting. It's this interesting thing. And I think that is what may have triggered, what was sort of sitting, waiting to happen in his brain, because he would have these little staring spells. He would ignore us essentially for 5 seconds, 10 seconds at a time. And being the good parents that we were and the ignorant people that we were as far as epilepsy is concerned, we just didn't know that those were seizures. So we'd reprimand him. We'd be like, Jake, pay attention to mommy. Daddy just asked you a question, buddy. And so we noticed that behavior, but there wasn't any bobbing of the head or any sort of convulsing or anything. But his teacher had told us a couple of times, Jake kind of zoned out a couple of times, might be something. So at his 7-year checkup, we told the doctor, and his pediatrician said, I'm not a neurologist, but he's great. And he said, I have limited knowledge, but let me ask Jake. Jake, can you hyperventilate for me? And Jake didn't even know what that was. And he asked Jake to breathe in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And then all of a sudden, it brought on this seizure. And not only did he kind of zone out, but his head bobbed a little bit. And it was terrifying for us as parents.
Sure.
But our pediatrician, Dr. Bruckner, said, I think he has epilepsy, or that's a seizure. So let me recommend a neurologist. So I'll do big jumps here in his story,
sure.
But went to a neurologist, was not a epileptologist, let alone a pediatric epileptologist. These are all specialties. These are all, you know, you need to get very, very specific and get to someone who really has the most knowledge for your child. And we learned that pretty quickly because Jake was kind of over-medicated on something to a toxic level. He was gaining weight, little side effects and things. Nothing dangerous, but enough that we knew, okay, we had to get to a specialist. And we began our epilepsy car wash, I call it, or our roller coaster journey. Jake is over the years, he got better, then puberty set in, he got worse. He had brain surgery wow. in Chicago to remove what we found out was, there was a local spot where it was starting. So that alleviated 80% of his seizures, but that was 5 years in. So his brain had learned how to seize. That was his sort of go-to
right.
for any kind of, if he got sick or any kind of stress or anything like that. So then that was one brain surgery. Then a few years later in high school, he was standing, of course, on stairs in his high school, hanging out with friends, had another seizure, fell back. And you can imagine falling back, not just to ground level, but farther, hit the back of his head and had what's known as a coup contre coup injury to the brain, where the brain is, shaken and it kind of popped a thing, a blood vessel or whatever in his brain. So he had a brain bleed. We didn't discover that for a few hours. We almost lost him, and he had had to have another craniotomy and, partial to remove the pressure. And that was another just absolute scare and terrifying experience. But having said all of that, all these years later, Jake's 25, he's got a great job, he's doing really well, he is on a cocktail of medications, he is, difficult to treat epilepsy, which you and I both know that sure. that affects about 25% of patients. So you need a cocktail, you need, hopefully you're with a pediatric neurologist, and now just a neurologist, epileptologist, that's also a pharmacologist. There's a lot of gist going on in this story, but Jake is, at the end of the day, now he's on, five medications, one of which is brand new, which just talks, it speaks to the pipeline and how amazing all the doctors and scientists and all the therapies that are available out there. He's on CBD, but it's prescribed. It's an FDA approved CBD called Epidiolex, and that's really helping. But he's, he has VNS implant, which is this vagal nerve stimulator. He's a bionic man. He's my hero. It's never stopped him from doing anything that he's wanted to do outside of driving. We take all the precautions we can. And obviously, and now he's 25. So you can imagine we've been through this for a long time. Many years, and I'm rambling. I apologize.
We love hearing this whole story. It's so compelling.
Yeah, it's frustrating if you don't. If for me, it's frustrating because, or it has been over the years, because you feel so helpless.
Sure.
You want to do something, and that something for me, outside of being a parent and doing the best that I can with my rock in our family, Elizabeth, who's just my wife, is just the greatest. We started talking about this. We realized many years ago. Many, many, many years ago, that's the biggest hindrance we have to raising money, raising funds, and trying to find a cure is people just don't talk about it. There's a stigma, and has been for so long. So I said, okay, well, I'm an actor. People, think they went to high school with me. They recognize my face. They, I'm getting more popular. My career's moving along. Let me use that as a way to get the word out. So I started talkaboutit.org with my buddy Ken. And Phil from the Epilepsy Foundation, and everybody at the foundation has just been absolutely incredible all these years. And I work with End Epilepsy, I work with Cure, I work with everybody I possibly can so that we all are more powerful together. It's developed into, I have a podcast called Talk About It, where I feature and talk to incredible people in the epilepsy community. The stories are just wonderful and heartbreaking and terrifying and hopeful as far as hearing other people's stories, so you realize you're not alone. Like you started this interview talking about the numbers of people that are affected by this. It is it is astronomical, and it needs more attention. It needs more funding, and we need to find a cure. And I'd love to hear your definition of a cure, and if you think there's one cure for epilepsy, because I don't. I just think we need to, you know,
keep moving. I wish we were there, and we continue to work so hard. And just listening to your story and the travails has been just one of those stories that I think many folks out there will truly understand, who's been a parent who's had to kind of manage things. One of my questions that I wonder is, like, you know, despite all of this, as you put it, this car wash, ups and downs, have there been any silver linings because of this experience?
Yeah, there's many, many silver linings. I think there's a level, there's a certain amount of importance to every moment. And everybody says this when they go through things, but to the friends you have, to, you know, how much BS you tolerate with people and situations, and you don't sweat the small stuff because, first of all, you appreciate the small stuff, you know, little milestones, things that are so insignificant, especially in the world that we're living in today, that people get into arguments about this and that. And I just think, and I think to myself, you know what, you're waking up in the morning with Jake doesn't have a seizure in the morning. My wife and I are like, this is a great day. God. This is a great day. Jake does. I mean, like I said, he works at a production office, a production company. He has a, you know, he's a productive member of society. He everything. I mean, he's a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. Like, he's not, he's my hero. Wow. And I'll put it into perspective for, like, me, right? I'm shooting this thing right now, this new show, and there's a lot on my shoulders as an actor. You know, you get nervous, and none of that bothers me. I'm like, really, I'm going to worry about messing up my lines or not hitting my mark or not doing the performance level that I want on that take. It's like, none of that's important when you know, the bigger things in life that can strike at any time.
Sure.
And you see it. Epilepsy is this thing that is like an earthquake. You never know when it's going to happen.
Right.
You fear it all the time, but you don't let it control you. You know, we talk about it with Jake all the time. And we have raised him this way, where he has epilepsy. Epilepsy doesn't have him. And
well put.
And he can talk about it as much as he wants. He can bring it up when he wants. You know, obviously, he's a grown man. He does what he wants. But over the years, he's learned that we're proud of everything about our three boys. This is just one aspect of Jake. And we're proud of how he's handling it. And you know, yeah, he doesn't drive. But guess what? I take him to a dirt lot somewhere. And he drives a car, and I drive him around. It's like, I don't care. He's, you know, I have this new, and it's amazing, like you said, how many people relate to this. I'm doing this thing now with Greenwich Pharmaceuticals, and they've sponsored the podcast this year, and they're also sponsoring, we're doing this thing called Caregiver. It's going to be, this is sort of, I'm breaking it here, but it's called the Caregiver. The Caregiver series is me going around and interviewing other dads, other moms, other spouses, brothers, sisters.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And highlighting the caregiver. That's the other thing, is like, my wife and I hate when people go, you know, how do you do it? You're the best parents in the whole world. I mean, it's these people are giving us a compliment and I want to strangle them. I mean, it's a weird feeling. It's like, what am I supposed to do? You know,
yeah.
I don't want pity. I don't want any of that. But there is a level of appreciation as a caregiver that you need to take a stop for a second, take a breath and go, you know what? I'm doing a good job. And it's okay to accept that. And I think from another caregiver, it's easy because it's so relatable. So it's been so wonderful. We did one episode. We're doing another. We're going up to Seattle. We're going to Houston. And so, you know, Jazz and Greenwich. I mean, I just cannot thank them enough for doing this. And it's been a blast for me. I love hosting. I love talking, as you can tell.
But we love listening to your story. Greg, as we kind of in our last moment here, you've just given us, as you said, you broke a new series in terms of looking at caregivers for folks that have walked through this journey. To our listeners and our listener out there, where can they get more information about the condition, or how can they help you raise awareness of this whole situation to get to a cure?
It's a great question. If you You know, if you want more information, obviously there are foundations, epilepsy foundations all over the country, and the Epilepsy Foundation of America is a great place to start. Our website, talkaboutit.org, is, I think, the best place. Like, if you Google any condition, you are going to be up at night, you're going to be terrified, and you should Google it, and you should learn about different things, no matter what it is. You know, I'm now branching out from epilepsy and helping other people, because we need to talk about all these conditions.
Sure.
But talkaboutit.org, I've wrangled and begged and borrowed and pleaded with all the celebrities that I know. They ask the questions, and then we have experts like yourself answering these questions. So, you know, Jennifer Garner's on there, and she'll ask, you know, if you're pregnant, can you even get pregnant if you have epilepsy? And then she freezes, and an expert, a doctor, comes on and, wow, and says, of course you can, and answers those questions. So I would go to talkaboutit.org. You can learn everything from seizure first aid to, you know, where, and we have links to everywhere. And the site just relaunched. And also, please check out Talk About It, my podcast, and look out for The Caregiver.
That is fantastic. Greg, I could spend hours talking to you. We love hearing from you and your story. I just want to thank you so much for coming on our show and talking about epilepsy during National Epilepsy Awareness Month.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you didn't have to choose me. You know everybody. I'm always there for you as you are for me. And, you know, you talk about silver linings. Meeting someone like you and working with you over the years has been a huge silver lining for me. So, all you have to do is ask, and I'm here, and I will sing that theme song for your show anytime you ask.
You can sing it right now as we close off our segment here.
What's health got to do, got to do with it? Oh, what's health got to do? You can't afford the real song.
We have been talking to the one and only Greg Grumberg, a famous actor, and we are delighted that he has come to share with us his story about epilepsy awareness. Well, that's our program for today. If you missed anything, you can catch the rebroadcast tomorrow at 9 p.m. or listen to the full program at WJCT.org. and on your favorite podcast app. Thanks to all of our guests and social media participants. Our senior producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our director. Our associate producer is Catherine Hobbs. Have questions or comments for our upcoming show on Does My Doctor Need to Look Like Me? Or an idea for a future show? Call us at 904-358-6362 or tweet me at jservin. Send an email to health@wjct.org. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Thank you for listening, and keep in touch.
This program is sponsored in part by the American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatments, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. Epilepsy Foundation Florida leads the fight to overcome the challenges of living with epilepsy and to accelerate therapies to stop seizures, find cures, and save lives. Visit epilepsy.com/Florida to find out how to get involved today.